accession number 19777, reel 9.
Norman, reel 9.
I did patrol it, went on this patrol with the Albanians, who kept well to the rear. And I was point man. I went out in front with my mate, Johnny Fox. And we hadn't gone too far when we came across a fire. So going to investigate it, I found that there was German bodies being burnt, and their hands were tied behind their backs with wire. I think that they'd been taken prisoner, shot, and they were being burnt by the Albanians. We bumped up against the Germans, and they let rip at us. Well, not at us, they let rip with everything they'd got. But they were a bit wider of the mark, so it didn't make much impression on us. And this happened once or twice, we'd bump into them. We noted their positions and went back. A few nights later, we did another patrol. This time, we were going to advance over the mountains, but it was just impossible to get much ammunition for the mortars. So we decided that we'd go along this road, and if we didn't bump the Germans, we'd dump ammunition behind them. And we got a jeep and trailer for this. So off we went. It was an uneventful night. We heard Germans shouting and talking, but this blessed jeep, it made such an awful noise. I wonder it didn't turn the whole German army out on us. We had put putties around the connection for the trailer, but it didn't seem to make any noise, any difference. The noise was horrendous. We reached a spot where they decided they would dump it, unloaded it, sent the jeep back, and we started lugging it all up the mountainside. And going up there, somebody said, mind the wire. Now, this was an old joke on patrols. When you're training, people would say, mind the wire. And there were no wire there, and then watch them all trying to feel and trip over the wire. And I thought it was another joke. Until I brushed into a wire. And there was a picket there, and on it was a little triangular yellow flag with a skull and crossbones on. It was in a minefield. Anyhow, nobody seemed to bother about it, and when I mentioned it, they said, oh, it must have been a dummy one if no mines went off. Quite nonchalant about it. It's a good job we didn't know where that it was a minefield, otherwise I think we'd have felt quite different. We dumped the ammo, and we found our own way back without the jeeper, or partly back. We didn't quite know where we were, so we laid in a sort of a sangha all night. I think this was something where the Italians had kept the Albanians had used to herd their sheep. All along this way, there was signs of where the Albanians had fought the Italians, wrecked vehicles and such things. However, the attack went in, and I think it went in at dawn, and we were supposed to have Sarandi by 1 o'clock, which we did. We took it quite a nasty fight, which I wasn't involved in, being mortars, and we took the town. The Marines did their stuff. We found what had been opposing us was a battery of 25 pounders, which had been taken in the desert. And There was some German artillery too. I think we had over 1,000 prisoners or close on to that. And quite a lot of them seemed to be glad to surrender because they were cut off. They told us that if we went to Corfu, we would be able to take it because the Germans there would be only too happy to surrender to us rather than to the Albanians, who would probably cut their throats. So, after consolidating ourselves around round Sarandi, a recce party went over to Corfu and contacted the Germans, who were only too happy to surrender. The mayor came along and said, "Look, whatever you do, don't let the partisans here get a hold of the German weapons, because if they do, they're going to take over the island and become part of what was now the Iron Curtain." So we made sure this didn't happen, and the Germans were pleased to surrender, but they were a bit wary of handing their arms over till they knew they were safe. And I think there was about 1,200. So back we went to Italy, taking all the Jerrys with us. Back to Monopoly, and to my surprise, I found I wasn't feeling well. And I woke up, I went to sleep and I woke up and a lot of singing going on. And I thought, gosh, what's happened? And I was feeling in an awful state. And my head was going round, I couldn't see properly. And the singing was young Italian girls. They were picking the olives, and as they were picking them, they were singing it. And I just laid there and I thought it was nice, and I thought, well, there's something wrong with me. I went and saw the doctor, and he said, "You've got malaria." And I thought, oh, what a laugh. I've been taking these horrible Mepocrine tablets to keep malaria away. I had nothing in Burma, where I took nothing, and I didn't get malaria at all. I come here, and a puny place like Albania, I go and get malaria when I've had these pills to prevent it. They stuck me in some South African office, hospital in Bari. And it was very nice there. I was well looked after. Eventually I came out and rejoined the commando, who'd now moved to another place called Biteto. And it was quite nice there. We spent our time training and going to a place called Altamura. We were training for a job. Rumour got round that we were going to take Trieste. And we were training with the 17th 21st Lancers. And they were a lot of, they were good soldiers and good everything, but they were a bit noisy about it. And I don't know whether it was true, but rumour got it that they shouted the mouse off so that we're going to take Trieste, and the job got cancelled. We thought it was because of them, but we never really knew. Eventually, it was decided that we would move up to the front. Now, the commandos were not really trained for this type of warfare. We were hit and run people. And they were going to take us up the front, and we were to learn how to cooperate with tanks and how to cooperate with artillery and everything else and front line. And we set off. The method of travelling was in cattle trucks, which was fine. And when we got to the casino, we hadn't been fed all day. We'd had something about 4 o'clock in the morning and late at night. It was getting dark with nothing to eat. Word came round, right, you'll get a meal at casino. Be ready. So we all fell in outside with our mess tins, and the transport officer came and herded us all back again. And Major Mac appeared on the scene. I think he was 2IC of the commando now. And he says, this train won't leave this station until my men are fed. And put a guard on the train and said, don't let that engine go. Of course, it was a hell of a row. And I never saw a meal come so quick. I think within 20 minutes that train was off again. And we were all eating on it. We went to Ravenna. I believe it was a beautiful town, but I didn't think much of it at the time we were there. I'd love to go back and see just how nice a place it is. We were training to go to... we were training for an operation, but in the meantime, they sent us to thicken up the line where the Italians were holding it. And these Italians were fully equipped, and it annoyed us very much that we had to carry our mortars and lug them, and they were driving theirs around in Bren gun carriers. It also annoyed us when we looked at their mortars, and they were rusty, and they had never fired a shot because the base plates weren't bedded in, and they'd been up there 3 or 4 weeks. So we said, oh, haven't you done this? And they said, oh, io niente boom boom, Tedeschi niente boom boom. We don't shoot at them and they don't shoot at us. Well, I think our orders were to liven the place up. And we certainly did this. I went out with the officer on to the observation post. And we saw the Jerrys all having a whale of a time, drinking and eating. And we got the mortars on them, we got the machine guns on them, we livened them up quick. In the end, the Germans sent over pamphlets, and they were saying, what has happened? We've done all right up to now. Why are you getting so aggressive? If you carry this on, we'll come over and sort you out. Words to that effect. It didn't take them long to realise that the Italians were no longer there. The same unit came back, but they didn't come back along in full view of the enemy like they left it. They came back under fire, and they didn't think much of us for upsetting the peaceful atmosphere of the war. We stayed in a house, our mortars, and the old Italian farmer stayed there, and he was a wonderful old chap. Every night, he would get up, and he wore combinations, you know, long trousers and long vest and things, and it was freezing cold, and he'd wander out and spend a penny. And we said, hey, dirty old so-and-so, spending a penny outside the door there. And we laughed at this. One night the Germans realised where we were and they gave us hell. And a terrific bombardment came down. And we're all lying in there. Word got round, stay where you are. As soon as it slanks, get out into the pits, the mortar pits, and we'll fight them back. And while all this is going on, this old fella got up and wandered out and spent his penny and went back to bed. I don't think he knew. I don't think he even woke up. It was just a habit. He did it in his sleep. Yeah, it was all right. No, there were no casualties. We got attached to the Garibaldi Division, or Brigade, I think it was then, the Garibaldi Brigade of the Partisans, all with red neckties. They seemed a happy lot. We got on okay with them. And in fact, they did quite a good job for us later. Little did we realise it, but we were being trained for the next job to come, which was Lake Camacho. Lake Camacho is on the east coast, just north of Ravenna. It's a huge lake, and it's very, very muddy, and it's a great place in Italy where they catch eels. Over on the right, over on the east side of the lake, there's a long spit of land, about 2 or 3 miles wide. The 8th Army and the 5th Army were going to launch an attack up through Argenta, and our job was to take the spit and make the Germans think that that was going to be a place where we were attacking, because if we went along there we could get behind them quite easily and draw off as many troops as possible for when the attack came in. So we set about training, and what we were going to cross in was things called fantails. They were huge, massive tracked amphibious vehicles. They'd never been used in Europe, but they'd make great success in Italy. They could go in the Pacific, I should say, and they could go through mud, sand, nothing could stop them. And they held quite a number of men. Well, that was the assault troops, and the rest of us were to go in what they called storm boats. I don't know how many men they meant, I've forgotten, probably about a dozen. It was a very shallow craft with an outboard engine and paddles. We were to paddle these out to the lake, and then when we got into deeper water, set the outboard motors going. Built across about 800 yards from our landing place was what they called a jenta. It was just reeds and mud and stuff, what they could walk along to catch the eels. We were to go there, blow up a gap in it, and to get the fantails through and assault, and then the rest of us land. We were supported by the Devonshire Yeomanry, who were firing from way back the other side, from miles away. And further down south, there was another landing to take place by Number 9 Commando. And on the land was the Marine Commandos, 40 and 43. 43 were to make a feint attack. 40 was to make a feint attack. 43 was to do the main. We were to land and cut off the whole Germans, and the 9 were to split between the artillery and the infantry, I think. So we cut off. I had a terrific weight to carry. I was a base plate, which weighed 37 pounds, and my equipment, which weighed about 70, which I'm walking through mud to get to these boats, was no joke. If I fell over, I thought, God, if I fall over here, I'll just be drowned before anybody knows what's happened to me. And somehow I managed to keep on my feet and up to the knees just about in mud. So we got to where the boats were, dumped our stuff on it and got aboard. And the special boat service set off. And they had a canoe with a light on the back, and we had to follow the light. So we started to follow that and paddling away, and the light disappeared. I don't know what happened to it, so we kept going. And we heard a terrific noise going on, and it was these blessed fantails. Every single one of them was stuck in the mud, and the drivers were revving up the engines to get them going, and there was a, you never heard such a noise in all your life. We were told to keep quiet, and they got a squadron of, I think they were Boston aircraft, flying around all the time to drown the noise, and this lot of fantails, they must have really told every German on God's earth that there was a large force in the lake somewhere. We got muddled up. Nobody knew. We lost formation. We were going round in circles. And I heard a voice of Major Mac shout out, "This is a colossal cock-up. Follow me." And really what had happened to upset everything was that the lake was much more shallow than had been reported. Some said that the SBS gave us the wrong report. Others said that the Germans had let a lot of the water out of the lake. I don't know which it was, but I know that we were stuck in the mud. Eventually, the storm boats reached the Genta with nothing to blow it up with nothing going on there. We were working to a plan. The artillery bombardment came down, and we had to just put in everybody we could in the, and not in the storm boats. We couldn't lift them over the Genta. Fortunately, we were towing an assault boat, one of these collapsible things. We hoiked those over, lined up, and paddled like mad towards the shore. There was no organisation or anything. We were just one great mass of fellas heading for this shore. The bombardment was absolutely perfect. I'd never seen such accurate artillery fire for this regiment of the Devonshire Yeomanry. They were firing 105mm American guns, which were mounted on I think they were mounted on Valentine chassis. They call them priests. But they were superb. Paddling these boats was always a difficult task to get them going straight. But somehow ours went perfectly straight. Everyone else would go left, go right, but ours just went straight like a speedboat and got about 300 or 400 yards ahead of everybody. And when we got near, I could see, I was in the front with my pal, I could see he was itching to be the first man ashore. I thought, well, I'm not going to let him do that. And we were about 20 yards from hitting the beach. I leapt over. I thought, I'll beat him to it. I'll be the first man ashore. And I disappeared in the mud. I just managed to hang on to the boat. And the sergeant was yelling at me for getting out without orders. And I couldn't move. I thought, this boat's going to come over me and I'm going to go under it into this mud. Fortunately, just at the last minute, I managed to struggle free and got on the shore, and by now I was covered from the head to shoulders in mud. Well, they gave the orders, get that machine gun in that house on the left. So I dashed across, right across the whole down front. Nobody else had landed. Got to this place. I was about to load my rifle when I saw what a state it was in. It was just covered in mud. If I'd have fired it, it would have burst the barrel. I looked in and there were three Germans. They had an MG-42 mounted on a table, pointed through a hole in the wall. And they seemed to be arguing among themselves. I thought, well, what shall I do? I'll throw a grenade, and I looked at that. I couldn't find it. My pouch was full of mud. So without more to do, I shouted, hands up. and up went their hands. Gosh, one of them had a submachine gun, and as his hand went in, up in the air, he left it, and it went flying across the room, and my only thoughts were, if that damn thing lands, it'll go off. Well, it didn't. And these Germans came out, and they were shaking like a leaf. Every one of them, they really were shaking from head to foot. And they were a bit nervous about coming out. And I thought, what the heck's up with them? I said, come on, hands up, prisoners. And one of them said something about wounded, about his officer wounded. And I think what he was saying now is that mein Officer is bewunden. So I said, right, you go and fetch him. I thought it might be booby-trapped. So I followed him in, and there was an officer wounded. So I called the others in and said, right, carry him out. And they did do. And I was a bit afraid that our troops were just landing now. I thought they might shoot them. So I went out first and got these out and told them to wave a white handkerchief and went off. They were taking prisoners. I rejoined the troop. And somebody yells out, is there a boat called Norman there? Yes. You're wanted by the intelligence officer. We got reorganised. We took the position with hardly a fight. And I went up there and he said, are you Norman? I said, yes, sir. He said, you was in Burma, wasn't you? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, what are those? And there was a gang of prisoners. And when I looked at them, they were all Asiatic. I said, they're Asiatic, sir. He said, I know bloody well they're Asiatic, but what are they? What nationality? I said, I've no idea. You've no idea? Well, you was in Burma. I said, yes, sir. He said, well, why don't you know what these are? I said, because I can't tell the difference between a Japanese, a Chinese, a Nepalese, or a Burmese, or Assamese. I said, they all look the same, sir. And he shrugged his shoulders as though he was some sort of an idiot. Actually, they were Russians. And they were Mongols fighting for the Germans. They'd been taken prisoner and told that Germany was going to win the war, and if they fought with them, they'd be well looked after. We took hundreds of these prisoners. Some of them fought too. And later they were all sent back to Russia and I believe shot. There was quite a hullabaloo about them being sent back, and we was people were trying to, I think Tolstoy's nephew wanted to have us up for war crimes for sending them back. They were nice enough fellas. I went forward, joined a troop, fired a few rounds at Germans that were a long distance away, and then got back to the mortars. We'd only two mortars, and we put ours in a bomb hot crater. It was a huge crater what the RAF had made, trying to bomb a little culvert nearby. There was water in the bottom, and we'd 14 rounds of ammunition. While I was lying there, I was tired, and my mate says, well, where are you going to kip tonight? I said, here. He said, I'm not, I'm going to dig in. So I said, oh, go ahead then. He said, I don't want... I said, why don't you stay here? He said, well, look at that water, you might...